From the Gettysburgian and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg, I'm Jamie Welch, and this is On Target.
I'm Ben Ponce. Today on Target, we'll discuss the Gettysburgian staff editorial on the draft freedom of expression philosophy and discuss some of the recent weather on campus.
Then we'll talk to the new head football coach, Kevin Burke. Stay with us.
All right, it's time to get into the news here on this edition of On Target. We're recording this Thursday afternoon. The campus is, gradually returning to normal after snow and then freezing rain, which led to quite a slip and slide of ice around campus. Yesterday in particular, Wednesday, was remarkably treacherous. I think I would have been better off using a sled or perhaps skis to get to campus than boots or shoes of some sort. But today was not so great either, although it was today that the college delayed opening many offices on campus until 10 a.m. to allow facilities some additional time to spread salt. On Wednesday, however, you would have thought that salt was in short supply or perhaps had not yet been invented in many locations around campus. Jamie, what were your thoughts on the maintenance / facilities response or lack thereof, not to ask too much of a loaded leaning question, with regard to this particular winter weather incident?
Well, the Winter Olympics may just be opening in Pyeongchang, but I sure felt like I was in the bobsled races yesterday on campus. Really would have been better off with a bobsled, the way I was sliding down the sloped sidewalks around here. Certainly not the most ideal of conditions. It seems like today salt seems to have magically appeared, when yesterday salt seemed to be not there. And I'm not sure whether that's because it washed away or what, but certainly it definitely seems like there was a lack of salt application in certain areas that students need to walk to get to classes, which were also not canceled or delayed.
Yeah, and I mean, let's be clear. Faculty certainly had the discretion, and in my case, at least one did cancel class, but that was, due to his commute to campus. If the campus cannot be, if students can't safely travel on foot from, a distance of two blocks without, I heard one student say, nothing wakes you up at 8 a.m. like the fear of breaking your ankle. Well, yeah, I think that was certainly the reality for many students. And I know that, in the evening, as the temperature started to go down again, some students were heading over to the Majestic for rehearsals. I think sometimes we think our campus is deceptively, we think it's smaller than it really is, and that, people just suck it up and get through to things. But certainly if main pathways, we're not talking about little obscure shortcuts. Yeah. We're talking about main sidewalks on Carlisle and Washington and such. If those can't be made safe to travel upon, to walk upon, it's hard to imagine why we can't do that.
Yeah, these were not just like icy patches in places. We're talking about, in some cases, like entire sidewalks that were just glazed over and coated with ice. And if the sidewalks cannot be walked on, and then even the grass was coated in a sheet of ice because it had snow. And then on top of the snow fell all this ice. So even walking on the grass, which normally is a safe bet when you're snow walking, was not the safest idea yesterday either.
And so I get it. Like, if it's freezing rains, there's going to be ice on the surface, but the choices seem to me either to be A, remediate the ice situation, or B, give students an excuse to not be on the ice. Cancel classes for the morning. Hard is this?
Yeah, it really seems like, they could either figure out what salt is and actually apply it to all of the sidewalks rather than just, outside of, one building, or they could actually, just delay classes to give it time for the sun to act as the where the salt did not.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not an easy call, and I don't want to make it sound like we're coming down hard on the folks in Penn Hall or on the facilities folks, and certainly none of the line facilities folks who are out spreading salt. I mean, they're doing scraping ice. They did a great job in a lot of places. And
yeah, I mean, absolutely. It just seems
to be a larger systemic issue here in terms of how we think about when classes should be postponed or delayed. Or, I mean, heck, it's possible in this day and age to do things remotely or just give an assignment.
Well, we have coverage on our website that seems to indicate that the professors here are not exactly interested in entertaining new online pedagogies.
Well, that's a nice segue. Did we talk about this last week on Target? I don't believe we did.
Jamie, why don't you give us a recap
of what you unearthed in regards to the faculty meetings, two of them, in fact, in the fall, in which there were some pretty strong opinions. And most of them not positive with respect to the prospect of online courses.
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely a lot of people that were upset. So basically, there are two types of online courses / hybrid courses that are currently going on at Gettysburg College. So for the past 2 years, there's been the hybrid course summer course pilot. So basically what's happened is current Gettysburg College students that are not incoming first years were eligible to enroll to take certain courses that are in very high demand and very tough to get into over the summer. It would be, taken during the summer months. There would be some sort of in-class component and then some sort of online component, hence the hybrid portion. So, for instance, Steve Gimbel's class was basically a week-long really intensive study of what the students would need to complete the online assignments. Basically, it was the entire course condensed down to a week, and then they just completed all of the work during that online portion that they would normally do and spread out throughout the entire course. So that was a very intensive model. And there were other courses that took other approaches, including Skype and things like that. And so that was one model. And then the other model is this CIC online and hybrid course consortium. And this is specifically for the humanities. And this allows students to, during the regular academic year, enroll in courses that are not offered at Gettysburg College but are offered at other institutions and take those on a hybrid basis. And we have a limited number of students that are participating in that. And we also have a couple courses that we're offering as part of this consortium to students that don't go here. And basically, a presentation on this was being given by Jack Ryan and several other people, including Chris Barlett and Tim Shannon from the history department. The comments and questions from the faculty really seemed to center around, I mean, the basic gist was they didn't know what was going on, they didn't approve it, and they didn't want anything to do with it. And that basically the general concern was that these online courses were going to be coming for their jobs. Which I is possibly an understandable concern, but I mean, in the case of the summer pilot courses, these were Gettysburg College professors teaching them, and it was providing opportunities to students that normally couldn't get them anyway. So it wasn't
in that case
impeding.
It seems that it would be creating new jobs or expanding new jobs. Obviously, the professors teaching over the summer are getting paid additional money.
Yeah. The full information on this is on the article on our website, the Gettysburgian website, gettysburgian.com. But I mean, definitely, students have said that they really appreciate the flexibility that online courses offer, and that they really feel like, based on looking at the evaluations, students that took the hybrid course versus students that took the in-person traditional course have rated the course the same. So it seems that students at least subjectively feel that they're getting a similar experience online that they would get in the classroom.
Yeah, I spoke yesterday to a student who is one of the, I believe it's only four or six students participating in the CIC courses this semester. Mm-hmm. And she is taking a course on religion and sexuality or something of that nature, which is not offered at Gettysburg. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if she's taking it as a fifth course or as a – it sounded like she might be overloading her schedule to take this particular course because she just happened to be interested in the subject, not offered at Gettysburg. And so, you know, I just fail to see what the hubbub about this particular issue is. And for the other thing is the CIC pilot program ends at the end of this academic year. Yeah. So it's not like it's necessarily a long-term program, although quite frankly, I don't know why it wouldn't be. One image from your article, Jamie, that particularly stuck out was, I guess, from Tim Shannon in the history department who put up the screen of a closed Blockbuster store and asked, do we want to be Blockbuster in the age of Netflix? And certainly, I think that our strategic plan, talking about implementing or experimenting with innovative pedagogical tools and technology, certainly would seem to support this program. To that end, the Board of Trustees is here this weekend. They are meeting on a variety of issues. I know that some committees are taking deep dives into particular facets of the Gettysburg program. I know the Gettysburg curriculum is on the agenda.
They will be discussing, my understanding is they will be actually getting a very similar presentation to what the faculty received in November and in December
with respect to these
online and hybrid courses. And so it'll be interesting to see if we get any reports on their reaction to these innovative pedagogies versus the faculty's reaction, which was mixed to negative.
Yeah, and I mean online courses. It really depends on the online. It really depends on the online course. I haven't taken any in college, but I took a couple in high school. One was fine. The other was a total disaster. And so I mean, in general, if a course is going to be a total disaster in real life, which the online course that I took that was a total disaster, I think that the gentleman who was teaching it would have been a total disaster in real life too. If it's going to be a total disaster in real life, it's probably going to be a total disaster online, you know, and if it's going to be fine in real life, it's probably going to be fine online. You can put lipstick on a pig and it's still a pig and vice versa.
And actually, it may even be better. There was a presentation. I went to an education panel. I'm in an education class, so I went to an education panel on Monday about the new trend that's emerging in education of this customized and hybrid learning, and how students in elementary and middle and even high schools are sort of self-pacing their learning, and it's all moving online, and how education now is focusing on students' individual needs rather than just sort of this model where you sit in a classroom and they dump information into your head. So students are going to be coming to college familiar with these online models and are going to be expecting that. And that's something that I think we're really going to need to look at into implementing, maybe even during the traditional semester as well, offering these, because students are looking for that. And it is just like Tim Shannon said, if we don't do it, other people will. And then we're going to look like we're in the dark ages. So it's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, let's switch gears now to the other big item today. In today's print edition of the Gettysburgian, the Gettysburgian editorial board, of which both Jamie and I are members, released a joint editorial that passed our board unanimously in support of the draft statement of freedom of statement of institutional philosophy on freedom of expression. Last week on this podcast, we read that entire statement. I read it. It was quite lengthy. And we also spoke with Associate Provost for Faculty Development, Dean of Social Science and Interdisciplinary Programs, and Chair of the Freedom of Expression Workgroup, Jennifer Bloomquist, to discuss her thoughts on the town hall. And today, we released the following editorial.
The issue. Last spring, members of the Gettysburg campus community expressed a range of viewpoints after the college allowed Robert Spencer, director of Jihad Watch, to give a speech entitled, quote, "The Political Ramifications of Islamic Fundamentalism," unquote. The college invited Dr. Todd Green, associate professor of religion at Luther College, to give a speech entitled, quote, "Professional Islamophobia," unquote, and students organized a solidarity rally with Muslim students held simultaneously with Spencer's speech. After that event, President Janet Morgan Riggs said the college needed to develop an affirmative statement of institutional philosophy on freedom of expression, and in September, she charged a committee to lead that process. Last week, the college held a town hall meeting to discuss the draft philosophy that the committee developed. Our view. As Gettysburgians, we understand that a more diverse community is a stronger one, and that learning from a variety of cultures, races, backgrounds, genders, and ideas is crucial for our development as a student body and a college. It is therefore our responsibility to both celebrate and protect our diversity. It is with this in mind that we strongly endorse the drafted freedom of expression philosophy. This philosophy encourages the exploration of our diversity by promoting an open dialogue of ideas across campus, while still protecting the basic rights of students and guaranteeing a functional learning environment. Striking a balance between promoting a safe learning environment and allowing for maximum freedom of expression may be difficult. However, representing a complete spectrum of ideas and fostering an environment of mutual respect are not antithetical goals, even if some ideas and discussions may be deemed offensive by a portion of our community.
By learning to identify, counter, and refute arguments we may find racist, sexist, homophobic, Islamophobic, xenophobic, anti-Semitic, or otherwise prejudicial, we ultimately develop a community of greater mutual understanding and deeper thinking in which clarity between us can lead to charity amongst us. If prejudicial misconceptions are not aired, they can neither be addressed nor corrected. A culture of silence implicitly promotes prejudice by pretending that because it is not spoken, it does not exist. Banning expression of ideas does not make those ideas go away. Admittedly, a policy of unfettered free speech may embolden some of our harshest voices, but when the shared values of our community encourage dissent rather than criminalize it, the richness of our dialogue and the diversity of our experiences will overpower occasional cacophonous smatterings of bigotry. Ultimately, although it may be more comfortable to silence the prejudice among us, we are strongest when we instead drown it out with a chorus of contradiction. Our freedom rings loudest when we refuse to silence those whose values differ from our own.
Different from prejudice or bigotry, however, is slander and harassment. This draft rightly suggests that the college may seek to restrict speech that constitutes slander, threats, or harassment, or is directly incompatible with the functioning of the college. At times, there can be a fine line between what constitutes a deeply offensive opinion versus slander. According to Black's Law Dictionary, slander is, quote, the speaking of false and malicious words concerning another, whereby injury results to his reputation, unquote. This philosophy challenges us to raise the level of debate far beyond ad hominem slander to an intelligent discussion and airing of ideas. Justice Brandeis, in his famous opinion in Whitney v. California, succinctly encapsulates the essence of this debate by saying, quote, if there be a time to expose through discussion the falsehood and fallacies, to avert the evil by the processes of education, the remedy to be applied is more speech, not enforced silence, unquote. By invoking these words in the drafted philosophy, Gettysburg College will commit itself to fostering an inclusive and robust dialogue on the pressing issues of today and of tomorrow.
In addition to the content of the philosophy, the college deserves accolade for the process it used in developing the statement. From the beginning, it was clear that this group of seven, which represented racial, gender, generational, and positional diversity, sought to engage the campus community in a discussion of this sensitive and often divisive issue. Using that feedback, they conscientiously drafted a statement that represented the consensus of the views they heard and the wisdom accrued from their diverse experiences. Furthermore, in assuring that the Gettysburg College Student Senate has the first opportunity to ratify or oppose this statement, the college has guaranteed students an indispensable voice in the process. The work group, composed of Chair Jennifer Bloomquist, Professors Ivanova Reyes and Hakeem Williams, Associate Vice President of College Life Jeff Foster, Trustees Jim Banks and Jeff Oak, and Student Senate Policy Committee Chair Patrick McKenna, deserves commendation for their laudable work throughout this undoubtedly challenging and consuming process. And President Riggs deserves thanks for her vision and guidance. This was a triumph for transparency. we urge the Student Senate, then the faculty, and then the Board of Trustees to ratify this statement of institutional philosophy as soon as possible. Our campus community will be stronger for it. And this editorial, of course, represented all the views of all members of our editorial board, which include Jamie Welch, editor-in-chief, Josh Wagner, our opinions editor, myself, Ben Ponce, our managing news editor, Alex Romano, associate editor, Catherine Lentz, arts and entertainment editor, Gari Mangala, co-features editor, Noelle Zimmerman, co-features editor, Claire Healy, co-sports editor, Elizabeth Hilfrank, co-sports editor, and Morgan Hubbard, lead copy editor. So that's what we thought. Since then, we also, in that issue, published another column from Nick Arbaugh, who is a member of Student Senate, a member of the Young Americans for Freedom at Gettysburg College, who were the group that invited Robert Spencer last spring. And Nick takes a different view. He's particularly concerned with a clause at the end about non-discrimination, and notes, and he's right, that the college could construct any definition of anti-discrimination or construct any anti-discrimination policy that it so chooses. And so on that ground, he worries that it could be a slippery slope sort of situation. And that's why he is encouraging Senate to vote no. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I imagine the trustees will discuss this, even though they won't be voting on it this weekend. Their vote will come in May, assuming it first passes Student Senate and as well as the faculty. So we will see where that goes. And so finally, just wanted to give a brief introduction. Coach Kevin Burke, the new head football coach at Gettysburg College, will be our featured interview guest later in the program. He'll be interviewed by our co-sports editor, Elizabeth Hilfrank. Coach Burke previously served as the associate head coach and offensive coordinator for, I believe, 14 years at Gettysburg, and prior to that, he was the head football coach at Juniata. He's a Gettysburg alum, played football under Coach Barry Streeter, who retired in the fall after 42 years with the Gettysburg football program, including 39 as head coach. So we're thrilled that Coach Burke was willing and able to join us, and we look forward to hearing what Elizabeth has to ask him and what he has to say in response.
And that wraps up our news segment. Now it's time for Sounds of Sunderman. Here is a selection from the jazz ensemble from the fall semester.
Satisfied, you rest on you. We thank you. We thank you so much. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
That was a fantastic performance, and now I believe we have Ben Ponce with our bullet report.
It's been quite a week in Gettysburg College Athletics. On February the 3rd, the men's basketball team defeated Haverford 77-67. The men's and women's track teams ran at Dickinson, but there were no team scores available. The women's basketball team defeated Haverford 55-54 on the road. The wrestling team on February the 3rd defeated Ursinus 24-14. The wrestling team also defeated Muhlenberg 26-16, but did not receive a score at the Messiah Open. They did lose, however, to the Merchant Marine Academy 20-19 on February the 3rd. The women's swimming team lost to Swarthmore 168.5-93.5. The men's swimming team also lost to Swarthmore 133-129, a nail biter. The women's basketball team defeated Dickinson 69-55. The men's swimming team also defeated Dickinson 114-90, but the men's basketball team lost to Dickinson 63-51 on the 7th. And the women's swimming team defeated Dickinson 118-85. Thus endeth the bullet report.
Thanks so much. We'll be right back with the interview with Kevin Burke, which was conducted by Elizabeth Hillfrank, one of our sports editors at the Gettysburgeon.
Hello, I'm Elizabeth Hillfrank, one of the co-editors for the sports section of the Gettysburgian newspaper, and today I am here with now head coach Kevin Burke of the Gettysburg football team. Coach Burke was a Gettysburg graduate himself, an athlete here, and is coming off of 14 years as an assistant coach. So welcome. Thank you for being here today.
Well, thanks for asking me.
And congratulations, first of all, on the new position. Must be pretty exciting. And
oh yeah, exciting doesn't even really cover it. It's been just a total sprint so far, quite frankly, to get it going. It's been really exciting, and it's been a whole lot of fun so far.
That's awesome. And so when you heard about Coach Streeter wanting to retire, did you think head coach would maybe be in the cards for you, or did someone kind of put the idea in your head?
Well, I think the first thing is I never really thought he would retire. So, you know, but no, I definitely was interested in the position right off the bat, and it was something that I aspired to. A funny thing, when I was a senior in college, Coach Streeter asked me what I wanted to do with my life, and I said I wanted his job.
Oh, wow.
So now it's funny. I just meant I wanted to get into coaching, but yeah. It just so happened a number of years later I was able to get his job, I guess.
Wow, that is really funny, actually. So your five-year plan actually kind of worked out.
Yeah, it took 30 years, but yeah, it did.
It's the same plan that you had.
Yes.
That's awesome. Yeah, how does it feel to now be coaching at your own alma mater?
Well, it was neat. I mean, when I had the opportunity to come back 14 years ago to coach at Gettysburg, it was sort of a surreal experience. I was actually living on Water Street at the time. We were sharing an apartment with a couple other coaches because my family hadn't moved down yet. And I would walk across campus from Bream Gym, and I would overhear conversations that seemed to be the same ones I had when I was a student all those years ago. So it was really neat. And I think every coach aspires to coach at their alma mater, and it's something that I would really recommend to anyone who's in coaching. It's just a tremendous experience.
And how do you think, coming from the perspective of a student athlete to now a coach, how do you think that helps you in the position?
Well, I think a number of things. I can talk firsthand about the benefits of the liberal arts education, and I can talk firsthand about what Gettysburg Great meant to me as an athlete, what it means to me now as a coach. And I think just you have relatable experiences because I was here. Mm-hmm. I went through here for 4 years and got challenged every day in the classroom by our professors, and I understand the rigors of the academic setting. I still vividly remember I one time was I was a track person here as well too, and there was a particular time where I really didn't do my time management skills very well and had to stay up really, really late doing a paper, and I fell asleep on the bus on the way to Johns Hopkins, and we had a meet at Johns Hopkins, and I fell sound asleep, and Ed Riggs, who was the track coach at the time, he let everyone get off the bus. Mm-hmm. Everyone get off the bus, and then he goes over to me and says, and wakes me up and says, I don't want to know what you were doing last night, but you know, the race is in about a half. And I was like, Coach, seriously, I was doing work.
Yeah.
You know, but there's a reality, and I think I can understand that for our students.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's definitely, as a student athlete, you can appreciate that. Definitely understand the time management problems. So coming into this new role, what are your feelings, like your nerves? What are you excited about?
Well, I'm excited about everything. Working with our student athletes here at Gettysburg is just a phenomenal experience. They fire me up every day. You know, I always laugh. You know, people say that coaches inspire athletes. Honestly, it's the other way around. When you see the work ethic and the dedication of our student athletes here, it fires the coaches up. And I just love being around them. I've been having an opportunity to meet with each one of our kids for a half an hour. It's taken me a while to get through the team. I'm still
big
working
team.
My way through it. But it's just tremendous to get to know the guys a little bit better. See, the thing that I'm amazed is all the different things that they're really into. You know, we have everything from cellists on our team to singers to writers. We have two kids that actually have an online magazine, I guess. And it's just amazing what our kids do. And I kind of tip my hat and I wonder, what in the world have I done with my own life? But there's also an overriding sense of responsibility. Our alumni, our campus community, our players, parents all expect great things from our football program, and you know, that's what we're trying to guide it to.
Right, and so this is the first semester of you really in the head role, even though it's not the official football season. What kind of, I guess, responsibilities and new challenges have you faced, or maybe things you didn't realize were coming with the job?
Well, I think one thing that just was overwhelming to me was the alumni response, the amount of emails and phone calls I got from alumni just wishing me luck and telling me how much the program meant to them. That actually took a tremendous amount of time to respond to each one, which I really wanted to do. So that was just phenomenal experience again. And then also what we're trying to do is secure a class. I mean, we were a little bit behind the eight ball in terms of when we really were able to get started. And I think we've done that really well. We've had some really good weekends. So far with the recruits coming to campus, we have another big one tomorrow, so we're really excited about that. You know, so those are some, and then it's getting everyone pointed in the right direction. When you're running a program as large of a football program, and you have as many people involved in the program, not just players, coaches, administration, support staff, equipment people, trainers, all those type of things, it's getting everyone pointed in the right direction. And I think that's really important. So we've tried to take a step back and talk to every constituency that we could about what they wanted to see from our football program. We're trying to address everyone's concerns.
Awesome. Did Coach Streeter leave you with any words of wisdom or things to pay attention to?
Well, it's actually even easier. I mean, I got his words of wisdom every day for 14 years and 4 years as a player. So I have 18 years worth of words of wisdom from Coach Streeter. And he's a tremendous individual. And I'm glad you asked me that question, because it's time to pause for a second and look back. We've been spending so much time looking forward to what we're trying to do with the program. What we can't forget how great this program has been, and the credit that goes to Coach Streeter and the influence and the positive impact he's had on so many young men's lives over the years has just been extraordinary. And I was one of the young men that he impacted in a very positive way. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for my relationship with Coach Streeter. I probably never would have gotten into coaching. I did not come to Gettysburg College to be a football coach. That it just kind of happened. And part of it was because of his just tremendous positive influence on me.
And so what do you hope to take from his impact that he made on students and the team and kind of turn into your own as you take it on the head role?
Well, I think the big thing is I can't try to be Barry Streeter. If I did, I would fail. There's only one him. He did a great job. But I think the thing that he really promoted in our program was a family atmosphere. I think he really worked on helping young men achieve what their goals were, help mold them into responsible citizens, help them just try to get on a path of understanding how to prioritize your life, and to pick out what things are really important to you, and then make sure you're structuring your daily existence to reach what you're trying to do. And I think all that permeates. So much of Barry Streeter permeates through me, and you know, but we're also, I can't be him, and I'm not going to try. I'm going to be me, and I'm going to coach to my personality, and we're just really looking forward to having a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, sounds like it's going to be a good time. Got some good background and a good way to look forward. Because you've been with Gettysburg for so long, what makes you want to continue and what makes you want to continue to fight for the orange and blue?
Oh, that's easy. I've worked at a lot of institutions. I've had the good fortune to work at a number of places, and there's no place that compares to Gettysburg College. You know, it's sort of funny, you know, so somebody, you know, sometimes recruits will ask, you know, what makes Gettysburg College different than other places? To me, everything. You know, mm-hmm. It's the people here, obviously. Obviously, we have a gorgeous campus, but it's the relationships you build on this campus. And it's also the fact that I think we as an institution have things in proper perspective. Our young men and women come here to Gettysburg because they want an outstanding education. They want a well-rounded experience. They want to come here and have a radio show. They want to come here and sing in the choir. They want to do so many different things, and I think that's just so tremendous to be around. And quite frankly, when you're around college-age kids, 18 to 22-year-olds, you stay young. And that's the great thing about coaching. And I tell people all the time, as long as I don't look in a mirror, I'm still 22 years old in my mind. But, you know, or if I try to do anything athletic, that kind of makes me feel my age. But other than that, but I think, why do I want to be at Gettysburg? Just because it's just really one of the greatest places on earth. And quite frankly, for me, playing college football was one of the best experiences of my life. The 4 years I spent at Gettysburg, without question, was just tremendous. And I used to tell people it was the best experience of my life. And then I got married, and my wife's a Gettysburg grad, and fortunately, I don't know what the word is. I used to still say playing college football was the best experience of my life, which I love my wife. Nobody misinterpret that. But then it was funny. I still vividly remember the first time I was talking to a recruit after my daughter was born, who was our first child. And I stopped for a second. I said, that was the first time I actually said playing college football was one of the best experiences of my life, because nothing compares to being a dad and a father. But what a great place to live and raise a family. Gettysburg is just a phenomenal area.
Are you looking forward to having your family integrated even more so into this Gettysburg family?
I'm not sure that they can be integrated even more. I mean, my wife's a Gettysburg grad. My children basically grew up here. My daughter is a freshman in college now, but it's not here. She didn't want to stay at home because she grew up here.
Leave the nest at some point.
Yeah, she grew up here, and she just said, you know, I need to spread my wings a little bit. So, but both my wife's sisters, so my sister-in-laws are both Gettysburg grads as well too, so it's really true. My mother-in-law is probably the best recruiter Gettysburg College has. So we're orange and blue, and it stretches to my family. My sister attended a different college, but she is probably our biggest supporter. She watches every game on the live stream and is just wears orange and blue every Saturday and really gets into it. So I'm not sure my family could be any more ingrained than they already are.
Thanks so much to Coach Kevin Burke for joining us.
That's On Target for this week. We'd like to thank head football coach Kevin Burke for being our featured guest today.
We'd also like to thank the staff of the Gettysburgian and the executive board of WZBT for their support of this project. Be sure to subscribe to On Target online or wherever else you may get your podcasts, such as TuneIn, iTunes, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettysburgian and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha, of the class of 2019, who was a music major focusing on composition from the Sunderman Conservatory of Music.